Well, the president is back to talking about the war on terror. The Congress is coming back to Capitol Hill. And E.J. Dionne and David Brooks are back in our studio to talk politics. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Both of you.
David, according to today's speech and other administration speeches, President Bush, like Churchill in the 30s, sees a global threat on the horizon, which his detractors do not see. Is this what we're going to hear about for the next several weeks? And is this what the fall campaign is going to be about?
I think it's what the rest of the Bush term is like. I think the atmosphere in the Bush White House is fixated on this, as you would be if you were president. The president wakes up. The first thing he sees are the casualty reports from Iraq, the names of the dead, and he circles them on the intelligence reports every morning. And I think this is the thing that obsesses him. And when I have conversations with people in the White House, they can scarcely talk about anything else. This is the core of their lives. And the message of this speech was that there's no opting out of the fight. I think the key quotations he got were from people like Hassan Nasrallah, who were saying, "Death to America was our reverberating goal, death to America." And the message is, you can't opt out of the fight. They're coming to get us.
But E.J. Dionne, this makes for a sort of ironic, paradoxical convergence that the White House and many Democrats both agree on what they think their strongest issue is, the war in Iraq.
Well, indeed. But in fact, the White House doesn't believe that the war in Iraq is their strongest issue because this speech really didn't talk about at all about how President Bush would fix his broken policy in Iraq. And I think the real theme of this speech is that the only hope Republicans have in this election is fear itself. It was very striking, I think, the disconnect between the early part of the speech where the president laid out this horrible, dangerous world out there and then said we've made progress. It's hard to believe that the first half of the speech is true if the second half of the speech is true. And I think he begged a lot of questions. If Osama bin Laden is a threat, why did we go to war in Iraq? If bin Laden is the threat, why didn't we finish a job in Afghanistan? And if Iran is the threat, why did we go to war in Iraq? I think these are the kinds of questions that a lot of people in the country are asking, which is why majorities now see the war in Iraq disconnected from the larger war on terror that started on 9/11.
But how is all of this, David, going to be presented either in Congress or to the public in the form of either legislation or election issues?
Right. Well, the core election issue will turn out to be the timetable for withdrawal. Should the U.S. withdraw within a year? And this is actually a very complicated issue. I have a lot of friends who opposed the war but now think it would be shameful to get out. I have a lot of friends who supported the war who think we should get out. But so I think it all comes down to this. Should we start withdrawal in a year? And the case for withdrawal is very sensible. We can't babysit a civil war. The case against is that if we did withdraw, we would leave the terrorists with oil wealth. And so, to me, there are very strong cases on each side, but it's going to be the core issue.
You mean we're going to have a central issue in an American election about what is one's analysis of Iraqi civil strife and the politics of the Middle East?
Well, see, I think David picked a very specific way to frame that issue, which is a Republican way of framing that issue, which is a specific one-year withdrawal. I think the other way to frame this issue is the policy we're pursuing working? If the answer to that is no, then the question is, well, should you vote for the incumbent party? And the other question is, how can we get out of the situation of babysitting a civil war, and I agree with that phrase that David used, with the least possible damage in the United States? The fact is that Democrats are under pressure to present an alternative, but the Republicans are not presenting a clear alternative. All Bush is saying is, if we stay, that counts as a victory. But I think increasingly, since we've been there as long as we fought World War II, a lot of people are saying, why should staying till the end of Bush's term count as a victory if things stay chaotic?
Well, what's the point of the Democrats proposing a motion of no confidence? This is not a part of our Constitution, actually, but a motion of no confidence in Donald Rumsfeld.
Well, it's further proof that we're getting to an increasingly parliamentary system in the United States, which is the subject for another day. But I think they're trying to put Republicans on record to say, look, the problem here isn't whether Democrats are going to vote for this or that bill the Republicans put forward. The problem is a botched policy in Iraq. They're holding Rumsfeld accountable. The downside to that is blaming everything on Rumsfeld leaves a couple of people named Bush and Cheney off the hook.
David Brooks?
Well, it's obviously a Rumsfeldian secret conspiracy to cement himself into office, because as long as Democrats are calling for withdrawal, there's no way anybody's going to get rid of him. But it does. I mean, you'd see in these two gestures the different strategies. The Republicans saying, we understand the enemy. They're trying to define the enemy. The Democrats saying, did these guys fight it well? And if the argument is, did they fight it well, then every Republican's on the side of the Democrats. So the Republicans want to distract attention from that.
Now, let me ask you about something that is not about Iraq or about 9/11 or anything. Immigration. It was not that long ago that it seemed the administration chose immigration as an issue that it would pursue in this year. Granted, they had chosen Social Security reform the year before, but we had a big debate about immigration reform. There were massive demonstrations, and now it appears, EJ, it's just off the agenda.
This is really fascinating. It's a great question because when Bush came in, and in the 2004 election as well, he made huge gestures to the Latino population in the United States, and he really did increase the Republican share of the Latino vote. He made very strong statements about how the people who come to America from Mexico and other Latin American countries are trying to help their families in the same way other people are. And now you find a situation where Republicans are so badly divided that they can't come up with a solution on this. They're split first between the business community, which would like a more open immigration policy, and those Republicans who are very skeptical of all these newcomers coming in. And then you've got all these Latinos who would started drifting to the Republicans, who it appears are drifting back to the Democrats, saying, gee, what we thought of these Republicans all along may have been right. So it's a real problem for the Republican Party.
I mean, what happened, David? Did the White House pick an issue it was deeply interested in and then just lose it? Is that basically what's happened?
I think EJ sort of has it right. The Republican Party is deeply split, and the Republican grassroots is deeply split. But to me, the big lesson of all this is how stupid Tom Tancredo and the Build a Wall restrictionists are. They rejected the president's comprehensive plan on the grounds that it was amnesty and it was too soft on immigration. So what they're going to get, A, is nothing for probably a couple of years, which is effective amnesty. And B, they're going to get a House and Senate which will certainly have more Democratic members and a bill that will be even less to their liking. They should have compromised, and they've just shot themselves.
You're saying that we're certainly going to have more Democratic members. And there's increasing talk that the Democrats could win at least one House in the Congress this year. Right. Is that serious talk?
Yeah, I think if you walked up and down Massachusetts Avenue here and polled people, everyone would have an opinion in Washington. And the consensus view would be the Democrats are going to take the House and probably fall just short in the Senate. That's about where the conventional wisdom is right now.
Most people, though, EJ, add a little proviso, which is if everything stays the same, if nothing big changes between now and Election Day, that's what's likely.
No, and that's exactly right. David's right. The conventional wisdom is where it is. And I think it's there for good reason, because a lot of people here are looking at polls coming back from districts and seeing all these Republicans in trouble whom they didn't expect to be in trouble. Republicans will probably have more money to spend at the end. The Republicans have a better organized get-out-the-vote operation than the Democrats have. And they're hoping that these technical things pull them through. But right now, I think the consensus is correct that if the election were held today, the Democrats would take the House.
E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and Georgetown University, and David Brooks of The New York Times, thanks to both of you once again for talking politics with us.
Thank you.